Hi and welcome to Matrix Moments. This is Saloni and in today's episode, we talk to Harshal Mathur and Shashank Kumar, the co-founders of Razorpay, as well as Vikram Vaidyanathan, Managing Director at Matrix Partners India. Razorpay is India's leading payment gateway and aims to revolutionize money management for online businesses. They cater to more than 350,000 merchants and process transactions worth approximately $5 billion annually. This episode is primarily focused on the early part of the founders' journey. We cover their fundraising process that started off with Y Combinator, living together as founders and what that experience was like, building out an amazing product culture, what they look for in a team when hiring, long-term vision for the company, and much more. Tune in.
Hi, everyone. It's my pleasure to welcome you to this episode of the Matrix podcast. I'm very excited about this one because it's sort of personally very close to me. Welcome, Harshal and Shashank, the founders of Razorpay, which has become the top payment gateway in India. And in this podcast, we'll talk about, a little bit about their journey and how they've built an amazing product culture at Razorpay. Welcome, guys.
Thanks, Vikram. Thanks for inviting. This is definitely exciting.
Vikram, hi. Thanks for inviting. Yeah.
So, guys, let's talk a little bit about the early days and go down nostalgia lane a bit. I know both of you guys met at IIT Roorkee. Very similar background, Shashank from Patna and Harshal from Jaipur. So, sort of not the big city backgrounds. Connected as computer science geeks and founded SDS Labs, and I think the legacy of SDS Labs might be bigger than Razorpay right now because of the number of entrepreneurs that have come out of SDS Labs. So talk a little bit about the early days, how you met and that journey.
Sure. I remember like I was in my first year of college. Shashank was a senior to me. He was in second year of college. And I was not in computer science, unfortunately, even though I was very deeply interested in programming and software. But as you know, didn't secure the right rank, so didn't get had to make do with mechanical as a branch. And I was trying to see how can I get involved in computers, even though I was not from the branch. So I approached this group of people that used to assimilate in Hobbies Club that were discussed about software. And that's where I met Shashank, he was a senior. So I asked his guidance on how could we work together to create like a software and tech platform for enthusiasts like me. Because even the computer science teaching that used to happen in the college was very theoretical. So how could we spend time in building a culture where people could tinker around, create things, work on projects on side. So Shashank asked me to come to his room the next day and we'll chat more about it. I hope that he was not going to rag me. But that's when I visited him and we spent a lot of time the next day in his room. Discussing just about what all things I have done in software, what all things he has done, what are our mutual interests. I think that's how we got to know each other. Shashank, anything you want to add on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, I was in computer science and IIT is a very good place, right, from a learning perspective. But one thing that is pretty clear after spending like 1.5 years in college, that the technical environment, right, just the spirit of experimentation, of building things, of, you know, just doing something on your own and putting it out, that environment was actually lacking, right? I mean, and IIT Roorkee is one of the foremost colleges in the country, and not having that just felt like, you know, something just didn't sit well with us, right? I mean, honestly, I actually wasn't as focused on academics. Harshal still used to get really good marks, but I always wanted to, you know, build something, right? I mean, code something and build out an application or a web application, right? And we didn't find that environment in the college. So we felt like, okay, I mean, how do we promote that, right? How do we change that aspect? And how do we create a more, more tech-focused, more computer-focused culture in college? And it will definitely help us. We felt we can learn a lot more using that. And that will also, in some sense, change the college for the good, for the long term. Like any college, there were a lot of stuff that always happens. Like, and those things was legacy that is continuing for a long time. But beyond the academic, just a technical aspect or something that we deeply wanted to impact, right? So
yeah,
that
so is how, I think we yeah
go ahead.
So we met with a couple of other seniors from college who were also interested in similar things. So we found a group of like-minded people, about four or five of us, who got together and decided that we'll start a technical group that invites people who are enthusiastic about building software and just work on doing hobby projects around building software, doing programming. And the idea was to build something which could be used by people. So that's how we got started.
You know, one of the things that I find interesting about the story is two things. One, you guys were thinking very long term then. And I know that defines where you guys are at Razorpay. And the second, talk a little bit about why, you know, SDS has a reputation that it's pretty hard to get into even today. And I think it's become harder and harder to get into SDS. So was that something that you thought of? Because, you know, that's also the reputation with Razorpay, right? That the best engineers and product guys get in. So how did you think about that? And what was, you know, your thought process then?
You know, we recruit first yearites, right? I mean, in college, okay. And most of the first yearites come to college after cracking JEE. So a lot of them have a significantly higher opinion as to, you know, in terms of technical skills, right? Not in terms of academic skills as to, you know, where most of them are, right? So we usually, I mean, when we go for recruitment, we usually go for people who prioritize learning in some sense, right? And not just academic learning, right? But learning by doing, right? And that's, honestly, that's not a natural stuff that comes to most people, you know, because that filter in itself, I think, is very difficult to crack for because you cannot fake it. And yeah, I think that I think people get to know, understand, I mean, you know, why that filter is difficult and why it's not something you can just honestly prepare for on day zero.
Yeah. And we spend a lot of time in SDS labs to prepare that filter, like an exam paper or interview process that would solve for that. And by iterating on that during that time, it helped us build similar stuff in Razorpay that how should the interview process look like so that it cannot be decoded as simply as, okay, if you want to crack Razorpay, you just read these five things and you can get in. It should be something that tests the innate ability of people to question things, or innate ability of people to learn more things. Basic thing we always focus on is like hunger, the hunger to grow. And those things are hard to fake, right? You can get those out in an interview process. If you design the interview process focusing on identifying these things, then you can find ways to ensure that it cannot be easily cracked.
We want to talk a little bit about how that, you know, hacker mentality and culture has, you know, sort of laid the foundation for some of the product culture you guys have.
Yeah, I was pretty interested in hacking as a
Paul. Which one of you guys was the better hacker?
It's definitely Ashton. You know, he has a mind for these things.
Sorry, Ashton, go ahead. Yes.
Yeah, so I was used to I was very interested in hacking, probably like second year onwards. As I said, I was not in computer science, so I was not learning a lot of theoretical knowledge. I was trying my ways on the non-theoretical things like hacking, which was easier for me to get into. So I used to spend a lot of nights just tinkering with websites, tinkering with apps that are available, trying to find a way to get in, and did a lot of renowned things during college in that time. For one of the things that we did, I actually got fined and caught by authorities. So I had to pay a 5,000 rupees fine. I had to get 20 marks taken away from discipline. I think at that point, and of course, when you have something like that happen in college, then the notice goes to your parents. The parents called up and said, like, we have sent you to IIT to study. What are you guys doing there? And things like that. So after that, I think that's when I decided to take a call that, okay, I should find a way to channelize this this skill into something else. So this happened around close to end of first year. There was one positive aspect of it. Because of that, there's a notice put up in the college that Harshal Mathur is being fined for hacking the institute website with this. And that generated enough reputation for me in college. Like, that's how almost everyone knew me, that somebody in first year has hacked the institute website. But going forward from there, I think one of the major focus areas became that, okay, how do I channelize this into creating something more productive? Because hacking is fun and it's interesting, especially for people who like it. But at a certain point, you want to figure out how can you channelize in the right direction. Otherwise, I mean, I would not talk a lot about what all things that we did in that while we were used to hack. But But at certain point, we realized that, okay, we need to channelize it better. Otherwise, otherwise the outcome cannot be very good.
By the way, it came out in our references and we said we have to work with this guy then. So, yeah, and by the way, my name has also ended up on this college board. So I was like, iske saath to kaam karna hi hai. So,
interesting.
I know there's a story where I think your first round is probably the hardest round that you ever had to raise, because after that I think you had investors chasing you ever since. Talk about that first round and how hard it was to raise that first round and actually raising it from, you know, some government body actually.
Yeah. So when we were building this college community, we needed funding. We needed to set up a software development section. We needed to set up a lab. We needed to buy servers. So we raised. We had to take money from the dean of the college, and I can kid you not. That is the hardest funding exercise we ever did. I think all the future fundings that we did from VCs was much, much easier. And simply because when you raise money from in a central government college like IIT Roorkee, first you have to pitch the dean. You have to explain what you want to do. Yeah, there is a committee that you have to get approval from. And unlike VC money, it's not that okay. The funding is approved. You get money in your account. Okay, funding is approved on paper. Then for everything that you use that money for, you have to go through a separate process. So every server I had to buy, I had to float an RFP, float a tender, get bids, submit that. Then everything, every rupee that you would utilize from that money had to go through a full deep process. And me and Shashank, I don't know how much time we spent in just filling up those files, carrying those files around to the deans to get signatures, to the professors to get signatures. I think that is the hardest exercise, in just not just in raising money, but in spending. Like it money.
You want to get an Android phone, you know, for developing applications, right? But if you just say we want an Android phone, you know, the question, I mean, it's not going to get approved, right? So we had put it forward as like you want a you know, a GSM antenna, right? We want a GSM antenna for usability.
So we needed a TV in the lab so that we could present to people when we done lectures. But if you know, like central government bodies with the bureaucrats there, if you put a TV for an approval, a 42-inch TV, it'll never get approved. So you have to put it like a presentation, 42-inch presentation monitor for conducting lectures. You have to twist and play it in that way. Otherwise, if it goes through and somebody in the bureaucracy picks up that and looks at, oh, hey, why is somebody approving a TV? Then it'll just get rejected and you'll have to fall through the cycle. So this is the first time you have to learn, okay, we have to get things through. In your way, you just don't have to talk. It doesn't matter whether your spirit is right. You also have to present it in the right way where people understand what you want to do.
That's a fantastic story.
And we raised like almost over a course of two, three years, we raised almost 50 lakhs, you know, from the admin.
I think you guys have made them proud. And I think that investment has definitely returned manyfold.
Yeah.
I know that journey from there went on to you guys going to YC, and I think at YC you guys started living together, and then you've lived together ever since. So clearly you guys don't get enough of each other. So talk about those early days of, you know, being away from home, being at YC, and you know how that bonded you guys together, and also how it sort of opened your eyes to what could be the vision for the company.
Yeah, so right after college, when we started working on Raise the Pay, I mean, we knew that like in the early days, we'll have to stay together because that's the only way to hustle and build. So Shang was in Microsoft in US at that point of time. I had left my job in Shlomanji and moved to Jaipur in my parents' house. And yeah, instead of moving to Bangalore or anything, I asked Shang to just leave his job and come to Jaipur. So we stayed, initially he stayed at my house and we started building Raise the Pay from there. And that's when we got into YC. So we decided to move to US, and we took a single one bedroom apartment in US because we wanted to save costs. So we had to stay together to save costs as much as possible. I think that was the biggest reason in the starting, but as we worked together, we realized there's advantages of us. There are a lot of advantages of us being together because hustling and working and late night chats, especially in the early times, like the amount of time you spend working is like considerably high. I mean, we used to work, I don't know, for 16 to 18 hours a day. And we just, and we would sleep at absolute random times. Because one of the difficult problems was that while we were up, the business has just started and the business was running in India, and we were used to have our sessions in YC in US. So we were in the worst time zone gap because we had to spend the mornings going into YC sessions, evenings going on customer calls. late at night. So yeah, it was hard to find time to sleep. But I think that's where staying together helped, because and those times, I think it while you're hustling and everything, it is always hardships. There's always worries on whether it will go right, whether it will not go right. And I think just having somebody along in that journey helps a lot to build the confidence.
Yeah. So I know we met you guys while, I think the first conversation that Rajat had with you guys was when you were in Jaipur and leaving for YC. And I remember him saying, hey, these guys are building this payment gateway, and we were very interested in investing in one at that point in time. But these guys don't know anything about payment gateways. I said, okay. But then I remember having this conversation in the middle of YC, and by then you had already got a product out. And I think by the end of YC, I remember us, because there was such a big rush to fund your round, us just, you know, saying yes on a video like this, because we couldn't, things were moving so fast that, you know, we just said, first meeting, let's just say yes. And we just did it on video within a 24-hour period. And frankly, we've been very privileged to be investors, so it's worked out. But it's a fantastic sort of first leg of that journey. I think it moves into sort of the org and the culture that you created. I think initially, I remember the org and culture was very collegial and hostel-like, because you extended what you had in SDS Labs into Razorpay, and a lot of the culture used to revolve around your house, and everyone was, I don't know how many people were living in your house at the same time who used to work at Razorpay. And so talk a little bit about that and, you know, the DNA that it created. But I also want to talk about how you've been able to attract senior hires after that.
So I think when we came out of SDS Labs and started the company, right, I think we were very fortunate, you know, because one of the toughest questions that I think early stage founders have to struggle with is how to hire, you know, your first employees, right, and how to hire your first team members, right? And because of our network at SDS Labs, I mean, the kind of people we worked with there, we recruited, we mentored, you know, honestly, we got the best of the lot, right? And we got them to work with us, you know, from day one. And we already knew these guys. There was a lot of trust. There was a lot of, you know, the shared spirit that we want to do something awesome, right? And most of these guys, I mean, who are with us even today, they didn't work in at any place, right? So they didn't know. I mean, we also didn't know. I mean, probably I am the only one who worked at Microsoft for one and a half years, right? But anyone else didn't see a corporate like this. So most of us didn't know, like, what exactly building and running a company means, right? So we carried over what we knew, right? We knew what worked for us in SDS Lab, and we knew that worked really well for us in the past. So, and we knew the output was high. So we kind of carried that environment, right? And the spirit that mattered for us was, okay, I mean, what is the output that we are providing, right? What are we building for the customer? How can we get our product to be used by the customer? That was a clear North Star. And we always kept revolving around, I mean, you know, moving forward towards that North Star, right? And all the guys that we had, we were really good in whatever skill sets that was there. But we never worried about, like, okay, I mean, you know, we need to have a formal office or we need to have a formal space. In the house that we were living at that time, I think the max that we had probably was 11 people. You know, and we came out of that after like almost 1 year. And to be honest, I think the first person that we hired after that, because we felt like it should not become a boys' club, right, was an HR person, because we also cared deeply that, you know, we should ensure that the culture is set for the long term. And that also actually turned out to be a really good decision, because as we got more people from outside later on, I mean, we were able to work through that. Okay, what are the things that work really well for us, right? What are the things that we value and that we want to look for as we hire outside folks and bring them into the organization and set the expectation that, look, I mean, you know, some of these things cannot be valid, right?
That's so, actually great. So
just to talk about, I mean...
Sorry, go ahead, Shashank.
Yeah, just to talk about, I think, you know, even in the early days, we always prioritize that, look, if you're coming in, then, you know, you need to have a sense of, I mean, at least two things are really important. First, that just having a very deep customer empathy and customer focus, okay? And you know, you care about that, okay, whatever we are building, whatever we are giving out, we are putting out, it should be impacting in a meaningful way, in a positive way, right? Whether it's a salesperson, whether it's an HR person, or whether, you know, it's a support person, we always cherish that quality, right? We always filter for it. And second was just a growth mindset, right? You know, you should, you want to come because you want to grow fast, right? You want to create an impact. You have that hunger. And the combination of these two qualities, at least in the early days, for a very long time, for, you know, all kind of hires, worked wonders for us. And we never compromised on that. And, you know, till this day, it kind of holds a lot of value.
Yeah, just one thing I would want to add to the early hires, right? Like in the early hires that we did, like, we didn't look for skill sets. We didn't look that, hey, we need a programmer, we need a web developer, we need a sales guy. We just had for the basic DNA, like, so we knew these people are smart, these people are hungry, and they connect well with us. We have worked with them. We know that their work ethic is very strong. So let's just get these people on board and we'll figure out the roles. So we knew these people. Some of these were people we knew from SDS Labs. Some of these were my friends. And we just started calling these guys that, hey, we are building something interesting. We just got into YC. Why don't you guys come over and we can like build something big out of it? And I think that was the only focus. And the roles and everything got figured out once they all came into this house, right? So we are around, just to correct Shashank, right? We still continue to live in that same house. So this is how, in the same house, we used to have around 11 people. Some people sitting, sleeping on beds, some sleeping on mattresses on the floor. But it's like a whole hacker house at that point of time. We're just trying to build something out. Nobody knew what roles they would do. Nobody knew what titles they carry. It was just something that, okay, figure out what you can do to make this a success. I think that was the early focus completely. And after that, as Shashank said, once we had the HR, then we started giving these things more structure. So it doesn't feel like a boys club. It becomes more inclusive and we can add more people from outside and doesn't remain a very close group over time.
I think that's two fantastic learnings there. One is actually, you know, hire for DNA and hire people who are sort of embody what you're looking for in yourself and not being afraid to do that. At the same time, I love this learning about, you know, that can turn into a boys club and get supervision quickly. In the form of an HR or anyone senior there. So I think there were both big learnings for young founders. Transitioning to senior folks, and I know you guys and very few other young entrepreneurs have been able to imbibe senior folks. And you guys have done a fantastic job of getting people who have been there, done that in other organizations. And frankly, at banks, and banks have a reputation of being very corporate and stuffy, but you've been able to transition them to a culture like this. What did it take and what were some of the learnings on some of the hires that didn't work and some of the hires that did work?
I think from day one, we knew that there are certain things that we can solve from first principles approach, right? So like programming, product, all of those things, we didn't look to hire senior folks very early on these things because we know that we could work from first principles approach and solve this. But there are definitely areas and specifically things like banking, things like sales, things like marketing, where experience matters and where people who have certain experience can build, keep bringing them in, can actually tell us how to approach these things. And that's where we decided we want to hire senior folks. So we have our first senior hire was when it was our 12th or 13th hire, which was a pretty senior from a startup perspective. But we decided to do that because we wanted to get somebody in sales. Similarly, we hired somebody later in from banking because, again, banking is a domain where experience matters, where having those network matters. And I think there are two things. First is looking for the right person. Not everyone fits into a startup journey. Not everyone who comes from corporate life fits into it. I mean, but there are misfits there. You can identify that they're misfits. They wouldn't enjoy that life and they actually will suit better into a startup life. So I think identifying that is first thing. People who fit very well into corporate life cycle will probably not fit very well into a startup because they're used to a certain type of environment.
Well, so, what in your, you know, recruitment and sort of interview process helps you identify the misfits?
I'll tell you a few things, you know, and we did make quite a few mistakes on it, right? And we came to this realization later as to distill that process a little bit, right? Of course, skill set is important. I mean, you know, that's what you're hiring for. But beyond that, few things that I think has helped us quite a bit over long term. I would say one is just having humility, right? We always look for leaders who are humble and who are aggressive. So who are not, you know, that's one. Second, I would say transparency. So we look for leaders, you know, who believe in disseminating information and helping others learn. instead of trying to hoard that for yourself, right, and use that as a leverage. That in some sense is an important one. And I think the third aspect will be, you know, we like leaders who respect skills rather than just age, right? Who respect what the person in front is telling you. Because, you know, I mean, in some sense, we have been outsiders of the payment industry, right? So we try to bring a lot of fresh ideas. And we still hire a lot of people from outside the domain, right? I mean, we don't restrict that, okay, you only need to have payment experience. Or even younger folks who come, right? They don't understand why things are being done certain ways. So we give the freedom to people to ask those questions, to question, like, you know, why this is being done that way. And just that aspect of, you know, I mean, you are respecting someone's thought process and someone's skill set instead of just respecting someone's levels, right? I mean, that is, again, you know, something of a mode of a cultural alignment for us. And those things have worked well, right? And you know, there are certain filters also, I mean, from just from an organization perspective, like we don't have cadence at all, right? Even at this scale, you know, either for me or Herschel or for any of the senior leaders, none of us have cadence that is there, right? And we always prioritize like transparency in the organization, communication that is there. So some of these things actually act as an automatic filter because, you know, some of the senior leaders who are coming from that background, I mean, if they cannot accept some of these things, then it's pretty clear for both the sides that, you know, it's kind of not going to work out, right? So, yeah. So it's just a combination of these things that has helped us a lot. And even this relation has been after a period of time, right? But I think what I would say is from the start, if you can build a template as to what kind of senior leader you want to hire, right, and acclimatize in your organization, that will probably help you prevent some mistakes that we did initially.
Yeah. Well, just to add to that, I think what qualities that Shashank described, right, these are not norm in the corporate world. Like, these are exceptions, right? You'll find a lot of corporate leaders who value experience a lot, who have that feeling in themselves that we have achieved and we know. And just believe me because we know how it is done. I think that is something that's easily identified in the first interview itself. So in most of these senior leaders, they'll spend a lot of time in the first interview and we'll just throw things at them that, hey, we don't have cabins. You will not get to travel business class, and just see their reactions on how they respond to these things. Because there are certain people who don't even give it a thought, right? It is so natural for them that, hey, this doesn't matter to me. I just want to grow and I just want to scale up. And those people are generally misfits in the corporate world. Those kind of hires have worked best for us. And it's not like we have all done all the right choices. There have been cases where we have hired somebody who was doing really well in corporate world. We brought it into Razorpay and it didn't work well because they come from that certain kind of expectation around how things should be. And in a startup world, a lot of things are different. So, but the one thing that happens is that if you have the right culture built in, that is something we notice even today, that our culture is built very strongly around hunger, around certain these things that Shashank said about on how people need to value others' opinions. And it's built so well that if some misfit, even if you hire by mistake, the system rejects it very quickly. The person will not be happy in the setup. So it's not that we have to keep a constant check on this. The culture keeps a check on it.
You know, when you look at strong cultures, they have one character so rejects people who don't fit that culture quite quickly. I also think there's fantastic learnings on how to hire senior people. And I don't think anyone has quite articulated it the way you did, Shashank. But to find people who are learners, who are not hierarchical and are recognizing skills in others. And then finally also are able to, you know, coach others instead of being very directive. I think it's a unique combination, and if you can find it, actually that's probably the ideal senior hire at a startup. I also want to recognize and call out because, you know, culture is always cohesive and it's lots of small things that you do. I know that, you know, the ESOPs have already been monetized for more than 200 plus people, and I think very few companies have done that midway through the journey. And I think that reinforces the fact that this is not hierarchical and everybody sort of owns the company. So kudos to you guys for having done that. I'm going to transition now to the product angle at Razorpay. And, you know, you have a very product-centric culture as well. And that's actually what's helped you beat everyone else. So first talk about, you know, that ethos and how hard it has been to preserve that ethos as you've gotten bigger.
So I think, you know, at the start, actually, it was much more easy, right? Because we didn't know anything else other than to build a good product, right? And at least in the beginning, it came very naturally. because, you know, we always used to keep talking to customers, keep asking for their, you know, validation as to, you know, whether you are using this product, whether you're using this feature. So that part, you know, was very ingrained very early on, right? I think the challenge for us happened a lot more as we scaled the organization and as the number of engineers increased and the number of product managers increased as to how do we keep preserving that culture. I think few things that has worked well, probably, I would say, I mean, till this date, there's a lot of encouragement on going and talking to customers. There's literally no way that, you know, you can survive in the organization. If you don't have that kind of customer empathy, it gets called out very quickly, right? We actually try and call out that, you know, look, there's something, you know, is important for our customers, and that's why we should do it and not something else that is going on, right? Second, just from a quarter-to-quarter perspective or month-to-month perspective, now we I'm talking about, like, as you know, as the organization has scaled, just tracking metrics very deeply, you know, which are impacting customers, is another very good proxy that we have found out. And, you know, because when we build teams, right, we build teams around customer problems, and we build teams around solving for something which deeply impacts the customer, and we just keep measuring that metric, you know, every day, month, quarter, and so that, I mean, and you know, this is the fundamental belief, right? You'll improve on what you measure, right? So if you're measuring something and you know that is impacting the customer in a deep way, then over time we keep on improving on it significantly, and those small improvements over a period of weeks, months, years add up to a significant advantage, such that, you know, it's not so easy to just go back and replicate it, right? And that, you know, in some sense has held us very well, right? And beyond that, I think beyond the product engineering also, I mean, anyone in the organization, I think for a long time we have followed this ethos that, you know, everyone should go and do support, right? And just handle support for some time and just see what kind of issues the customers are raising, right? That again helps build a lot of empathy. The value of it cannot be understated, right?
So it's amazing how many of the founders on this podcast have always mentioned customer centricity as a core to having a product culture. And, you know, doing sort of customer service and customer support has been called out again and again, right? And starting from the Bansals at Flipkart to Nitin Kamath at Veeroda, every single person says, you know, spend time on customer support, listening to customer calls. And Harshal, before you add, I also want to talk about the fact that you've always kept product at the center of every decision. And I know banks are pushing you to do something else, partners are pushing you to do something else. How difficult has it been to say, okay, you know what, this is what our product is, and we will say no to business or no to a certain kind of partnership so that we can provide a better experience?
Yeah, in the early days in particular, and that's not just true for products that we've already launched, for any new product that we launch in early days, it's very easy to digress away because there's some short-term opportunity that comes up and you try to gobble that up, and because of that, the product takes a completely different direction than what you thought out to be. And that is something that, like, I think founders and the leadership team has to keep a very close check on, otherwise it can go wrong. I'll give you an example of the early days, right? So for example, when we were building the payment gateway, right, and we started pitching to investors and other guys, and our focus was just to target SMEs. But when you talk to investors, a lot of them will connect you to large companies in their portfolio that, okay, speak to these guys, see if you can convert them, because that could give you a big jump in the volumes that you do. And yeah, of course, it's exciting. It seems very interesting. So we pitched to one of the largest e-commerce companies at that time, which our investors introduced to. And they were interested, but early on, we realized that they had a lot of demands. And if we decided to service them right now, we'll end up becoming their slaves, because once we get them on board, we can't afford to lose them. And we will end up becoming basically an outsourced shop for them, because we'll have to keep building things exactly what they asked us for. Because once you get them on board, our product direction will not be governed by us anymore. It will be governed by them, because if they need this feature, we'll have to build it. If they need that feature, we'll have to build it, because we can't afford to lose them once you get them on board. So we met these guys, we figured out that we could actually close them. But if we could close them, the organization will take a completely different shape. And we took a call and said that we are not going to serve them right now. We told it very clearly to them that we are not ready for you guys. Once we have a certain scale, today those guys are our customers. But at that point, we said that once you have a certain scale, we'll come back to you. But today, probably we are not there. Let us serve the small guys. And it was a hard conversation, because this was an investor who was closing around with us. But we told them that, hey, it is not right for the company to tweak that call right now. We had similar approach on banks, but banks were still hard, easier to handle. On the customer side, it's a lot more interesting that a large customer closes today and will suddenly change the place at which you stand by orders of magnitude. And this is, I've talked to so many founders who fall into that trap that, hey, we get this one guy and suddenly we'll be a $100 million company. So why do we need to get these 1,000 small guys? I think I remember around that time, I had a conversation with you in one of the meetings. And I was talking about this same confusion, and you gave me this, you explained this concept of rabbit, deer, and elephant. That if you get elephants on board way too quickly, then you'll spend a lot of time getting them on board and you'll not move very fast. You should focus on the deers and rabbits and focus more on rabbits in the early days and then on deers, but don't go to the elephants right now. I think that hit a chord as well in the direction that what we were thinking. So I think that that helped us. If we had taken that approach at that point of time, I don't think we would have been where we are, because we would have gone to serve that one large customer, maybe got five large customers, but that's it. Like we couldn't build things that we have been able to build in the last couple of years if we took that approach.
That's actually fantastic learning on how to keep your own product vision centric. And I do think that's sort of core to the fact that you were payment outsiders at the beginning and you were disrupting payments or the way payments was getting done at that point in time. And it's been a fantastic journey to watch you guys go from payment outsiders to financial services insiders. I keep meeting Harshil, especially at these 5-6 a.m. morning flights, because both of us are going to Mumbai at that point in time. And the only thing that has changed in this outsider to insider journey is that now he started wearing a blazer on those flights. Other than that, actually, they have changed. So it's just been fantastic to see that.
I had to learn that to wear a blazer, because in initial days when I used to meet bankers, I would go in t-shirts, and we realized that they are not taking us seriously. Because when you go in t-shirts and you look like a couple of college guys, they say, hey, what do you guys know? So to change that perception from outsiders to insiders, I had to start wearing a blazer and dress up in a shirt and everything. Something that I had never done in my college days, I would probably never do if it hadn't been for Razorpay. But sometimes, as I said earlier, the perceptions matter to people. And while you are doing the right things and everything, sometimes just showing that perception that you are serious about it helped. So wearing a blazer was the least I could do to get a deal with the bank.
How do you guys deal with the flux and noise in the fintech ecosystem? And, you know, you've been through the wallets noise, then the UPI noise, then there is the fintech lending noise, and it just keeps coming, right? And then there's now Reliance, and then there's neobanks. But I've seen you guys stay very true to what your mission is. How hard has it been to stay focused? And I know we're going to talk about the future as well.
I think just one thing, we'll just start with that. I think one thing that we said in the start is, when you define the vision, it is important to define what you want to do, it is also very important to define what you don't want to do. And I think in early days, we were very clear that we want to build for businesses. We don't want to build for consumers. We don't want to build for banks. We want to build for businesses and solve problems for merchants who want to go online. Our focus is to digitize merchants. And we've just stayed on that track since day one. So when people said, hey, why don't you guys build a wallet? We said, it doesn't solve merchants' problem. It maybe solves some consumer problems, but it doesn't solve anything for the merchants. So we'll partner with wallets, integrate them, but we don't want to go into that. Similarly, when UPI came around, we were the first ones to launch support for UPI acceptance for merchants. We're the first player in the country to do that. But we never decided to build a UPI app because it doesn't target merchants. Similarly, in neobanking, we decided to take the neobanking approach, but again, targeting merchants to digitize their banking approach. So whenever a problem hits our merchants and we believe that something that can solve merchants' life issues, that is something we wanted to pick up very quickly. But anything else that was on the fringes that, hey, you should launch the consumer product because you already have a merchant base, it might be easier for you to get a traction on wallet, get traction on a UPI app. It didn't make sense for us, because while you could get short-term traction on it, long-term, it doesn't fit into our vision of solving for merchants. So I think just defining very clearly on what you want to do and what you don't want to do helped us early on. And yeah, these are all sort of decisions, not just from even your own merchants would sometimes ask, why don't you guys have a consumer instrument? Banks would ask, why don't you guys have that? We would have investors who would ask us that, hey, if you had a consumer angle, we would fund you more easily. You would have all of those pressures coming in, but knowing that what DNA the organization has, and what DNA you are trying to build, and what is your core strength is really important. And I think that's what we focused on.
Yeah, I think it has taken a lot of effort to just say no to some of these things, right? And just saying that, okay, let's be aligned to what we want to do and not get aligned to, just the trends that are happening in the industry, right? I mean, we always want to take advantage of trends to, again, go back and solve for those customer issues and think, okay, what are the new stuff that we can solve for, right? What are the new products that we can build, that will solve long-standing challenges, right? But never jump on, I mean, the trends will keep on coming. Actually, that's one of the good things about the fintech industry. There's always something exciting to look forward to, right? There's something new happening every year. And you always want to be in such an industry compared to where nothing happens and it's boring, right? But even when everything is happening like that, you still need to take a step back and look at, okay, I mean, what are we really driving towards? And let's be focused on that, right? And let's just keep learning with whatever is happening and take advantage of it at the right point. But let's not just do something just because, I mean, everyone is kind of doing it, right?
Guys, thank you so much for the time. I think it's just been a fantastic conversation. And, I know we can keep talking and going on. I want to call out a few things that are just so unique to this conversation. One is just the fantastic partnership the two of you guys have built. I know the two of you guys are still like next door to each other in the next room. I think it's just fantastic the camaraderie and partnership you've built. Second, the customer as well as product focus. It's clear that it comes from the two of you guys. And to be blinkered in that focus is just outstanding to see. The third is, I think you've made pretty complex strategic decisions very simple because of that customer and product centricity. I know this is sort of just the beginning of the journey for you guys, given that I know how ambitious you guys are. It's been a privilege to be part of the early part of the journey and look forward to the rest of the journey with you guys. I also want to tell listeners that we will come up with another podcast, which is much more about the future at Razorpay as well as the vision for future at fintech. So stay tuned for that. Thanks so much, you guys.
Thanks, Vikram.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Vikram, for inviting in. This was really fun.
Thanks for tuning in. For more Matrix Moments episodes, you can head to www.matrixpartners.in/blog. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for more updates.